You're listening to Adopter Stories by the Adoption and Fostering Podcast.
In this episode, we speak to Bree. She shares her story of experiencing post-adoption depression.
We adopted... Well, we didn't really know if we wanted children or not. My husband had two birth children from his previous relationship. So when we got into a relationship together, children wasn't ever really talked about. He wasn't sure if he wanted any more, and I wasn't really sure if I wanted to have children either. We spent, 6 years together. And then his boys would come and stay with us every other weekend or every weekend and during school holidays. And when they went home, each time they went home, the house felt more and more empty, and that we had so much to give full time to a child, it felt like a waste. So we looked at ways that potentially expanding our family and decided adoption was a viable option. So that's what we did. We found the process of adopting quite long, very self-exposing, almost like you're under a spotlight for a lot of the process. The lots of questions, lots of visits, lots of training weekends, so time that was spent in rooms. I remember our preparation weekends were 2 weekends in May, and it was 2 of the most gorgeous weekends that we had all year. That was our summer. We missed it because we were in rooms. But yeah, it was long. I wouldn't say there was much of the adoption process, that initial getting to panel, that I enjoyed. It was, difficult. So we went to panel and we got approved, and that panel was probably my worst memory, because our county hall is a big old cold building and we were sat in a room right at the back. It was dark, it was dingy. You go into this room of complete and utter strangers who then get to decide whether you have a child. It seems very bizarre, very archaic. And then we got approved, and then you go into this kind of waiting zone, don't you? You're waiting to be matched, but it could happen at any point. But you've got to carry on with life as normal, carry on going to work. You can't prep for anything, like parents that find out they're going to be, you know, people that find out they're going to be parents can plan, they can buy things, but you can't really buy anything. You can't get that excitement. It feels like a very strange place to be. And then we got, I think, 2 previous matches before we went with our son, and that again is very strange process of getting through a report on a child and reading through it and deciding whether or not that's your child. It all feels very bizarre. Reasons that we didn't go with those was, I think you just know, don't you? You know whether they're going to fit into your family life or not. When we first saw our son, I knew straight away. I saw this picture on the front and it was an instant click. This is our son, we've got to make this happen. Went to matching panel, got matched, and then still you don't meet your child, do you? So you go home and you're like, this is our child, but we still haven't met them. We had to meet with foster carers, do your introduction panel where you sit and decide what's going to happen, and then we met him. And that was amazing. And I know that they say, you know, love at first sight, but it certainly was. I felt a lot of maternal instinct towards him. We did introductions over 10 days. And they were really hard 10 days, because he took to us straight away, and routines were quite easy. The foster carers had kept him in quite a specific routine, so it was easy for us to get into that, into his routine. He quite happily went off with us, so it was difficult to then still leave him at the foster carers, and the foster carers were like, you know, this is the process we need to go through. Finally picked him up on the 10th day, put him into his car seat and drove home, and I cried all the way home because it's incredibly overwhelming, and all the whole process that you go through, you don't let yourself stop and think, do you? You just, what's on to the next thing, on to the next thing, what do we need to do now? And it's not until that child's there that you think, oh my God, what have we done? You process it. So we did the funnelling that was suggested, so told everyone to stay away, and it was just the two of us for at least the first week, and foster carers came round to see how things were going, and he recoiled from them. He didn't really want them anywhere near him, which was quite sad. They had a bit of a cry, and yeah, we had a bit of a cry as well, because it was a sad feeling for them. You could feel how they felt. And then, yeah, just got into normal family routine. When you take a child home, they feel like a bit like a stranger, don't they? Because it is a stranger living in your home. So it's building those, I don't want to say bonds, because bonds take so long to build, but it's making that stranger become more familiar in your own home. My husband went back to work because he only had the 2 weeks off of work. Went back to work, and I was on my own, and it was a very strange place to be. Quite a sociable person. Work life's really busy. And I think from that funnelling and keeping people away, it made me even more push people away. Yeah, so tried to get into some sort of routine with him, of maybe up the courage to go to baby groups, which is really difficult. I know a lot of adopters feel quite difficult going to baby groups. You don't really know what to say. You don't really know how to integrate. You don't really feel like, in a weird way, you don't really feel like a mum, because you haven't had that birth experience. So I tried to get into some groups, didn't really feel like I belonged there, felt like an outsider, became more and more isolated. Don't really remember much visits from professionals around that time. Became more isolated at home. Tried to break up the day by doing things. Would go out in the morning, walk the dog, go out in the afternoon, go to the park. But become more and more isolated. Believing that I was the only person that could provide for my son, didn't anybody else to be near him. Didn't want anything to happen to him. I thought anything that happened to him, they would take him away. If I showed any signs of not coping, they would take him away. So in my head, clean home, structured routine, you know, his needs being met, that was my main goal. The cleaning of the home became obsessive, and that was how I'd break up my day. And it just continued, and it got worse and worse and worse. Professionals around us, social workers tend to back off, and you want them to, because they've been so intensive up until that point. When you get the child, you kind of want them to back off, and they get that vibe. But didn't really have anyone else come out. The health visitor came out for the looked after, you know, the LAC review, the looked after child review. But my son was having his needs met, and he was, you know, settling beautifully. There was no need for any other further support. I remember emailing my social worker from the downstairs toilet saying, I'm just crying and I don't know why I'm crying. I'm not sure what's wrong with me. She was really good, and she said, I'll come out tomorrow and I'll see you. So she came out, and she was lovely, but she said, what you're feeling is completely normal. It's how everybody feels. Just make sure you get yourself out more. try and meet some other mums, which is good. It was good advice, but it almost then validated to me that how I was feeling was normal. So I carried on and didn't seek any further help because I thought, well, what, this is normal. I'm supposed to be feeling like this, so I'll carry on. So he was placed with us in the August. In December, we always go away after Christmas. We go away on a small family holiday. And because we had a young child, we decided to go to Centre Parks for the week. And it was the most horrific week ever. I think because my husband was at work a lot of the time, that week my son used it as a way of forming an attachment with my husband. So those had an amazing week of bonding, but quite often with children, they go to one or the other, don't they? So for that whole week, because he was so intense with daddy, I would be pushed away. So he didn't want me to do his basic cares. He didn't want me to feed him. He didn't want me to put him to bed. And that fed into my, I must be doing a really crap job. I'm not being a very good mum. We came back from that holiday, and it was in January that I put him to bed, went into my bedroom and packed a suitcase and said, I can't do this anymore because I don't want him to be removed. I don't want him to go back into foster care. And if I'm not doing a good enough job, then I need to remove myself. Husband came up and was like, we really need to get help because this isn't you, and you're a fantastic mum and you're a really good stepmum to my children. This is, something's happened to you. We need to sort it out. So I went to the GP, and GP didn't know what to do with me, you know, an adoptive mum. Their instant thought was, can't be postnatal depression because you haven't had a baby. So said, well, maybe we should ring social services and see if you can get any support through them. This fed into that anxiety that I had and panic that, oh, God, social services are going to take him away. We can't phone social services. So he said he would look around to see what else I could have. So I went home, and he phoned later that day and said, there's a mental health service called Steps Wellbeing, but it is a self-referral service, so here's the number, give them a call. I didn't give them a call because getting to the GP had been massive. Admitting that there was an issue had been massive. So then to have to do it all again with somebody else was... yeah, it felt like a massive, massive task. So it was a good couple of days, possibly even a week before I gave them a call. Gave them a call, went through the questions and scored really highly on anxiety and depression. So got fast-tracked to cognitive behaviour therapy because, well, there wasn't any service specifically aimed at adoptive parents. Went along, had a first few couple of counselling sessions, and the counsellor said, there's a postnatal group called Out of the Blues that I think that you would really benefit from, because I think that what that's what you have. It doesn't necessarily have to be hormones, but you're really suffering from that transition to parenthood. You know, it's a massive change for you. Went along to that group, and yeah, it was in that group that I realized how poorly I was, and that was when my recovery began. Yeah, and I had a few more counselling sessions, and she said, oh, I've been researching it because your case really interests me, and I think that you have got, you've had post-adoption depression. So it was nice to have a name to it and to realise that it was, you know, it almost validated how I was feeling, because I felt like I'd broken myself and I wasn't cut out for being a mum. But yeah, so that's what happened. Got onto the road to recovery, began to find myself again, because I'd lost myself in that time period, because I'd stopped doing everything that made me, because I'd completely focused on being the best mum that I could possibly be. So I had completely lost focus on me, found me again, and yeah, found being a mum, and yeah, that's my story really. So the recovery process, I started in Out of the Blues. I think it's a 5-week course or a 7-week course, weekly, meeting with other mums, chatting through what it feels like to be a mum, all those challenges that you get, realising that how I was feeling was because I was a mum, not because I was an adoptive mum. And then that gave me the confidence to start to build connections with other parents. So I went to toddler groups, I met other mums, I got out more out of the house, I started doing things for me. So self-care was a massive, massive part of my recovery. That was what I lost sight of. I didn't do self-care at all because I put everybody else's needs before my own. So self-care, going out for runs, making sure that I had at least, you know, an hour to myself doing what I wanted to do. And that's something that I continue to this day, and I really advocate other people doing, is self-care. I think it's crucial that you don't lose sight of yourself. And yeah, over the years, I recovered, and then I put it in a box and put it away because I didn't want to think about it. That was something that happened. It was a dark period, probably the darkest period of my life. And I don't want to, it's done with, it happened, move on. And we've had an amazing 4 years, I think it is, since I had that 4 or 5 years. And we've got an amazing connection, and he's just absolutely phenomenal and blows my mind with all of his achievements. But then I started looking around at what other parents were, adoptive parents in particular, were experiencing. I moved into the health visiting service and realised that they're a profession that are completely unaware of post-adoption depression in particular. They're supporting families. My health visitor that came to see me could have quite easily picked up on my depression if she had been aware of it. So now I've launched into a let's do something about it, because the only way I'm going to be able to confront my own box on the shelf, and I wrote a blog on it the other day. It's my residual shame and embarrassment. When I look back on those times and I feel shame that I failed to be a parent, and embarrassment that social services, you're under scrutiny and they select you specifically for this job, and then you fail. So you failed yourself, you failed social services, you failed your son, you failed your family. Complete shame and embarrassment about it. I've called it Bob. So that's my shame and embarrassment. So the only way I'm going to get rid of Bob and get the box off the shelf is to do something about it. So I'm, trying to change the health visiting service, trying to raise awareness of post-adoption depression to say that it does happen, and it doesn't mean you're a crap parent, and it doesn't mean that you're failing. It just means that you've had this massive transition in your life and you need to get help, and that's it basically. Things are really good now. Busy, very busy. I work and I'm doing all of this campaigning and blogging, and obviously still trying to have that balance of being a mum, and you still get those hiccups of being an adoptive parent, don't you? Things coast along quite nicely and then something slaps you in the face, like the other morning when we were late for school. We're always late for school. I'm the mum that's driving to school, and if you see me, you know you're late. And he looked up to me and he said, no one loves me because my mum gave me away. And that just slaps you straight in the face. And you have to do something about it. You can't just waver that away. So, at 8:10 in the morning when you should be leaving the house, you're sat down doing life story work. So that sort of thing just adds to the busyness. But it's just, having tools in your kit that you can deal with those things. So would I do it again? I would. My husband, I think, saw me at my worst, and he had to do a lot of the support. And I'm not sure if he would. I'm not saying that I would get post-adoption depression, but I certainly think that that might have put him off. Also, when we decided to adopt, we always said it would just be one. We didn't say that we would go for more. The only condition we said is if there was a birth sibling that came on the scene and we were an option, then we would go for more, but we always said one. I think what held me back for so long saying anything was all the publicity around adoption, and everything that you see on the internet and on social media is all very positive, because obviously they want you to adopt, they want to attract adopters. I think that that's the wrong angle to go down. I think I didn't speak out because I didn't want to be worried that people would try and shut me up, and we can't possibly have her talking about post-adoption depression because that will put people off. But I think the more that you are, the more awareness you have, the more tools you're given at the start would prepare you more. So knowing about post-adoption depression at the start, knowing about how intensive you need to therapeutically parent would have been a lot better. Yeah, I think we need to be better prepared as adoptive parents. Would do it again, and my relationship with my son is amazing, and he's confident and sociable. And when we read his profile, there were concerns around his learning abilities, and he's completely acing school academically. He's doing brilliantly. And when I look back at my life without him, I can't think about it, because it feels like he's always been here. And sometimes I have to remember that he was adopted, because he feels like me. He feels like he should be mine. It's fate that, I believe that everything happens for a reason, and we were meant to adopt, and he was meant to be our son, and he's meant to be with us now, and we're a family.